Good morning. In the news this morning, Herring Seiners had their second opener of the season yesterday in the Sitka Sound Sacro Herring Fishery. Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Dave Gordon opened the fishery at 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon in an area north of Middle and Crow Islands. There's no official word yet on how much herring was harvested. On Wednesday, Seiners landed 2,100 tons. They're working toward an overall harvest of over 11,500 tons. More than 200 people gathered for the annual Choose Respect rally yesterday on the Capitol steps. Juneau's was just one of 143 such rallies happening across Alaska. Governor Parnell was in Palmer, and Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan led the Capital City event. It's a Parnell administration goal to reduce sexual assault and domestic violence, support victims of abuse, and to get as many people involved as possible in the Choose Respect campaign.
So, 3 years later, how are we doing? Well, we certainly have not ended the epidemic of sexual assault and domestic violence in Alaska, but we knew that this was going to be a generational undertaking. So we're making progress, but it will take years. As for the second goal, giving voice and hope to those who have been abused, we think we're getting pretty close. There is power and healing in doing this for our citizens.
Juneau's march was led down Main Street by a procession of motorcycles to the site of the future Walter Sobolev Center, Alaska Native Cultural Center named after the late Tlingit minister. It was there the lack of respect for Alaska Native women and the Violence Against Women Act became the topic. Congress recently reauthorized the federal law. While it grants tribal courts jurisdiction over non-natives in domestic violence crimes in Indian country, in Alaska that applies only to Metlakatla, the only Indian reservation in the state. Many Native groups do not believe the act sufficiently protects Alaska Native women. In an open letter to Governor Sean Parnell, a group of concerned citizens urged Parnell to work with Alaska's congressional delegation to fix the law. Jesse Reinhardt and Ishmael Hope were representing the group.
We just wanted to make a direct but still respectful and courteous statement about just how Alaska Native women, Alaska tribes should be included in the Violence Against Women Act.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski worked to insert language in the legislation to make sure Metlakatla would be treated like lower 48 reservations. Reinhardt says that does not help other Alaska Native women.
When VAWA was reauthorized, it excluded Alaska Native tribes from issuing civil protection orders. And that's really important in Southeast as well as other villages throughout Alaska. Murkowski unfortunately went in and put language in the VAWA Act that has the words Indian country. So whenever you use those words, you're excluding Alaska tribes, except for Metlakatla. So most of Alaska tribes do not have Indian country.
The group requests the state of Alaska work with Alaska tribes and the delegation for greater civil protections of Alaska Native women. Alaska Congressman Don Young says he meant no disrespect by a term that he used to describe migrant workers during a wide-ranging interview. In a statement yesterday, Young said that during an interview earlier this week with KRBD Radio in Ketchikan, he used a term that was commonly used during his days growing up on a farm in Central California. Congressman said in his words, "I know that this term is not used in the same way nowadays, and I meant no disrespect." This is what he said during that earlier interview.
I used to, my father had a ranch. We used to hire 50 to 60 wetbacks and to pick tomatoes. You know, it takes two people to pick the same tomatoes now. It's all done by machine.
Congressman said yesterday he has compassion and understanding for migrant workers and the hurdles they face in obtaining citizenship. He says they play an important role in America's workforce and the country must tackle the issue of immigration reform. In market news this morning, the European oil markets are closed today. Yesterday, Brent crude oil went as low as $109.01 a barrel, and West Texas Intermediate is at $97.20 a barrel this morning. Gold is down nearly $9 in New York spot market trading, currently at $1,596 an ounce. Silver down about 33 cents, currently at $28.36 an ounce. But zinc is up this morning, currently at 83 cents a pound. The Air Force is canceling its flight training exercise scheduled for April in Alaska. An announcement from Pacific Air Forces says Red Flag Alaska is being set aside because of budgetary concerns. The training exercise traditionally takes place at Eielson Air Force Base in Fairbanks, and they use the Joint Pacific Alaskan Range Complex for training. Next month's training was to have included aircraft and crews from Canada and the United Kingdom. The Air Force says they will still offer use of the range to them. Pacific Air Force's officials at Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam said in Hawaii said they're trying to reduce the effect of sequestration on other training exercises. The planning continues, though, for another red flag training exercise in Alaska in August. And an official welcome home celebration for about 100 Anchorage-based soldiers will be held this afternoon. The ceremony marks the return of the 23rd Engineer Company to Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson from Afghanistan. The soldiers returned to base on March 14th after clearing roadside bombs from busy roads during a nine-month deployment. The unit was featured in the Heroes of Hell's Highway documentary, which aired on the Discovery Channel. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for a chance of rain and snow this afternoon. Should get up to about 42 degrees and as much as 3 inches of snow mixed in with that rain tonight. Low temperature about 34 degrees and then some snow mixing with rain early tomorrow. Temperatures this weekend between 35 and 45 degrees for most of this weekend. Looks like some rain also for Sunday and some snow showers expected for Monday night. Currently 29 degrees at the Juneau Airport and 30 degrees in Douglas. And at the Juneau Airport, Alaska Airlines says flights are running on schedule this morning. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. In the headlines, the state Senate has passed a $9.9 billion state operating budget. Reconsideration notice was served, meaning the budget bill could be voted on again before it moves over to the House for consideration. If the House does not agree to changes made by the Senate, then the budget bill will likely go to a conference committee. Yesterday's 16-3 vote followed numerous failed attempts by minority Democrats to amend the bill, including adding more money for education, transferring $2 billion from reserves into the permanent fund, and reduce or eliminate funding for the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. Alaska Congressman Don Young says he meant no disrespect by a term that he used to describe migrant workers during a wide-ranging interview. In a statement yesterday, Young said that during an interview earlier this week with KRBD Radio in Ketchikan, he used a term that was commonly used during his days growing up on a farm in Central California. Congressman says, in his words, "I know that this term is not used in the same way nowadays, and I meant no disrespect." Here's what Young said during that earlier interview.
My father had a ranch. We used to hire 50 to 60 wetbacks and to pick tomatoes. You know, it takes two people to pick the same tomatoes now. It's all done by machine.
The congressman said yesterday that he has compassion and understanding for migrant workers and the hurdles they face in obtaining citizenship. He said they play an important role in America's workforce and the country must tackle the issue of immigration reform. More criticism over reauthorization of the Federal Violence Against Women Act when a panel of experts met this week at the University of Alaska Anchorage Justice Center to talk about tribal courts in Alaska. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes was there and has more on the story.
Assistant Professor Kevin Illingworth heads the Tribal Management Program for the University of Alaska Interior Aleutians campus. He says tribal nations predating the United States gave up lands and resources, but extensive federal and state laws and court rulings have established they did not give up their inherent sovereignty.
Inherent authority essentially means that tribes have all the sovereign authority that they have ever had, unless that was specifically taken away by the United States Congress.
Illingworth says tribal judicial systems have existed since time immemorial and continue to serve a useful purpose. For instance, he says tribal courts are able to help families situated far from the state's Office of Children's Services, or OCS, which maintains offices in urban and hub communities.
Kids have to fall a long ways to get caught by that OCS safety net. Tribal sovereignty and the tribe is there right away to make sure that people can get help when they need it, that they don't have to wait, that they don't have to call somebody outside of the community, that people can be safe in their own communities. To me, that's what tribal sovereignty is about. It really is about taking care of your own community, making sure that people are safe, making sure that it's a good place to live.
According to a 2011 survey by the Alaska Legal Services Corporation, there are at least 78 tribal courts in the state. They hear cases ranging from animal control and juvenile delinquency to domestic violence protection. Tribal government specialist Lisa Yeager with the Tanana Chiefs Conference says in the years since Congress adopted the Indian Child Welfare Act of 1978, tribal courts just in interior Alaska have prosecuted an estimated 3,000 cases, many of them adoptions and child custody cases.
We have 37 tribal courts. We have 37 tribes. They are not all active at the same time. We have some tribes right now that don't have any active cases. We have other tribes that will have 100 cases right now that are active in their tribal court.
In recent weeks, tribes have criticized an amendment to the Violence Against Women Act that specifically limits Alaska Native tribal sovereignty. The law recognizes the authority of Native American tribes to prosecute offenders in cases involving non-natives and tribal members. When sponsor U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska introduced the amendment in February, she said it clarifies that those provisions only apply to Alaska's one reservation, Metlakatla, because other Alaska tribes are landless. But staff attorney Natalie Landreth with the Native American Rights Fund says case law from the 1990s makes it clear tribal authority is not tied to land status.
We are way behind the lower 48. This law is already established. It's already established that you don't need Indian country to have jurisdiction over civil matters, especially things like children's cases. It's already established that the core of your jurisdiction is over your tribal members. It's already established that not everybody in the case involved needs to be a member of the same tribe. Whoever the impacted person was has to be either a member of the tribe or eligible for membership. These are very well-established rules, and we're simply applying them within Alaska.
Landreth says tribal courts are critically important in protecting the vulnerable in 140 communities in rural Alaska without any law enforcement. Before it was enacted, senators criticized the Violence Against Women Act over concerns non-natives wouldn't receive fair treatment in tribal courts. Washington Senator Maria Cantwell responded the act restates existing requirements that tribal courts protect civil rights. Under a Rural Alaska Public Safety Initiative proposed by Murkowski, the state would individually review tribal court procedures and could approve courts to try cases of domestic violence among their own tribal members and with the consent of the offender, but excluding non-natives and offenders from other tribes. Tribal leaders and state officials are reviewing the proposal. Murkowski was not available for comment on this story. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Weather forecast for most of central southeast calls for rain and snow for today in the form of little snow, no accumulation expected at least for Gustavus and Hoonah today. High temperatures should be about 41 to 43 degrees for Gustavus, Hoonah, and Juneau, and some rain and snow possible for tonight. As much as 3 inches of accumulation expected for all three communities tonight. Low temperatures should be in the mid-30s. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. In the headlines, herring seiners had their second opener of the season yesterday afternoon in the Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery. Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Dave Gordon opened the fishery at 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon in an area north of Middle and Crow Islands. There's no official word yet on how much herring was harvested yesterday. On Wednesday, seiners landed 2,100 tons. They're working toward an overall harvest of over 11,500 tons. Aerial surveys by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game report not much active spawning activity in the sound yet. Last year's fishery got off to a bad start when herring started spawning before the seine harvest commenced. In the Sacro fisheries, fish must be caught before the females have released their eggs. Seiners landed less than half of their goal before the season closed last year. A bald eagle found dead on a busy Sitka road is the fifth eagle killed there this month. Alaska Raptor Center Director Debbie Reeder says the eagle was likely killed by a vehicle. She says a total of 8 bald eagles have been found dead in Sitka this year. Reeder says this is a tough time for bald eagles. Birds taken to the center in late winter and early spring often are not healthy before they're injured or killed. She says the birds the center sees are skinny and hypothermic. The dead eagle will be sent to the National Eagle Repository in Colorado. The repository offers feathers and other parts to tribes for use in their ceremonies. A decade ago, during the winter of 2003, a lone black wolf appeared near Juneau's Mendenhall Glacier. He soon captured the hearts of many in the community. He was seen more and more and began to seek the companionship of humans and domestic dogs. Someone gave him the name Romeo, and for several winters, he was regularly seen around the glacier to the delight of many Juneau residents and visitors. But in the fall of 2009, Romeo was killed. It was believed that 2 trophy hunters shot the beloved wolf. As Rosemary Alexander reports, the case prompted a sociological study of trophy hunters.
In 2010, Park Myers of Juneau was sentenced to 2 years probation and a fine for unlawfully taking big game and bear baiting. His hunting partner, Jeffrey Peacock, of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, was later sentenced to 3 years probation and a fine for his role in the illegal hunting activities. Prison time for both was suspended. Many in the capital city reacted with outrage over the death of the wolf named Romeo. But that was not the reason former University of Alaska Southeast professor Alex Simon decided to analyze the case.
As a sociologist, what I think is important to do is step away from individual personality traits and to look at the larger social context.
Simon has done that in the February journal Capitalism, Nature, Socialism. His article looks at the reasons why many trophy hunters are hostile toward wolves and people who advocate for wolves. Simon is a hunter, but not for trophies. He admits he was personally outraged by Romeo's death and the way the case was handled in the courts. But for him, it's a chance to identify the social factors that may help explain Myers, Peacock, and others' animosity toward the wolf.
Over the last couple of decades, the public perceptions of wolves have become increasingly positive, and perceptions of hunters, particularly trophy hunters, has become particularly negative. And so even in a hunting state like Alaska, the majority of the public actually has a rather negative view of trophy hunters.
Simon says it's common for some groups to feel threatened by those who regard wolves and other wildlife. His research indicates that certain segments of the hunting population suffer from what he calls out-group anxiety.
The groups that are suffering from this out-group anxiety, a lot of times what they want to do is step in and punish the groups that they feel have had rewards unjustly conferred upon them.
Hence, shooting the beloved wolf.
You know, in the past, it might be in the U.S. South, maybe burning down an African-American store because they're seen as being too prosperous, so to restore the moral order of white superiority.
In this case, stories, books, and pictures were sold about Romeo. The wolf became a symbol of living with wildlife in Alaska.
With some people in this community, they really see that as an inversion of the moral order. There was certainly a lot of outrage about the crime, but there were also certainly a lot of people who really approved of those actions.
Simon taught sociology at UAS for 5 years when the black wolf was getting a lot of attention. Simon is now teaching at Utah Valley University in Orem, but he's back in Juneau to present his paper. He's speaking at 7 o'clock tonight at UAS Egan Library. He's already presented his thesis at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Anchorage. He says he hopes the Juneau talk will attract some critics.
In both Fairbanks and Anchorage, I was essentially preaching to the choir. I suspect this will attract a wider audience. Hopefully, it will attract some people who are critical of my position.
Go to the KTOO website for links to Professor Simon's research and other stories about Romeo. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
And once again, that talk is coming up at 7 o'clock tonight at the UAS Library. In other news this morning, the legislature will consider a bill that will allow public school students to challenge a course provided in their school district. House Bill 190 by Representative Paul Seaton would require the state's 53 school districts to create assessments that would allow students to demonstrate their mastery in a specific subject. Currently, there is no requirement that school districts provide an opportunity for students to challenge courses for academic credit. And it's up to each district to decide the criteria of each assessment, but the bill stipulates that they must give a student full credit if they successfully challenge a course. In the sponsor statement, Seaton said the bill will encourage and reward student initiative by rewarding their initiative. The bill was introduced yesterday and was referred to the House Education Committee. And a new Senate bill proposes tax credits for Alaskans who give money to most schools around the state. Senate Bill 89 by Senator Mike Dunleavy would give taxpayers a credit if they donate for, quote, educational support purposes at public, private, nonprofit, and religious elementary and secondary schools. Dunleavy says he considers this bill an appropriate vehicle for vouchers because it does not allocate public money and it's up to the donor to decide where the money goes. Taxpayers would still be credited for donations allowed under current law, such as those to universities and Native corporations. The measure also increases the limit on the total amount that may count as a credit from $5 million to $25 million per taxpayer. The bill was referred to the Senate Education and Finance Committees. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for a little bit of snow by late tonight. Weatherman's calling for as much as 3 inches of snow tonight with some rain and snow mix for most of this afternoon. Temperatures today for Juneau, Gustavus, and Hoonah should be between 34 and 42 degrees. And then some snow mixing with rain early tomorrow morning, becoming all rain later in the morning and then diminishing. And high temperature about 43 degrees. And then cloudy skies on Sunday with a chance of rain. And then some rain mixing with snow showers Monday afternoon. Temperatures between 34 and 44 degrees. Currently in the capital city at the airport, 31 degrees. 33 degrees in Douglas, 32 degrees overcast conditions reported in Gustavus, and mostly cloudy skies in Hoonah, 30 degrees this hour. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. I'm Matt Miller with this update of local and state news. The state Senate has passed a $9.9 billion state operating budget. Reconsideration notice was served, meaning the budget bill could be voted on again before moving on over to the House. If the House does not agree to changes made by the Senate, then the bill will go to a conference committee. Yesterday's 16-3 vote followed numerous failed attempts by minority Democrats to amend the bill. The top officer of Kodiak's Regional Native Corporation has resigned amid reorganization. Kodiak Incorporated President and Chief Executive Officer Will Anderson had held the job since 2006. In a letter to shareholders, he said that the fiscal year that ends Sunday has proven to be difficult. The company expects to post a net loss, its first in 9 years. It made $127 million in revenue in 2012. But Anderson has said that the company's shift away from federal 8A contracting to other areas required investments and the annual dividend would be cut. A 45-year-old Anchorage woman has been charged with misappropriating more than $200,000 from an Alaska Native Village account. Lori Klum, formerly known as Lori Sue Johnson, was arrested on Wednesday. U.S. Attorney Karen Leffler says that Klum was indicted March 21st on 3 counts of theft from an Indian tribal organization. Her brother, 47-year-old James Kramer of Valdez, was indicted on 1 count. Prosecutors say Klum was voted out as the president of the Native Village of Tetitlik in 2008, but ignored the election and kept control over village bank accounts. Prosecutors say she wrote checks to herself totaling more than $200,000 and gave a $20,000 cash withdrawal to her brother. Congressman Don Young says he's not worried about an investigation into whether he violated ethics rules. The House Ethics Committee announced this month that they're looking into whether the congressman misused campaign funds, failed to report gifts, and lied to federal officials. During a visit to Juneau yesterday, Young told reporters that he's cooperating with the investigation. He also accused the committee of playing politics and targeting him, as well as New Jersey Democrat Rob Andrews.
You know, reality is that I truly believe that they had to have a Republican as well as a Democrat. As you know, Andrews is under the scrutiny, too. And we'll see what happens. I'm confident where I am. Always have been. If I wasn't that confident, I couldn't continue to run and look the Alaskans in the eye.
Young says that the new investigation should not affect his work in Washington.
I've been under a cloud all my life. I'm sort of like living in Juneau. It rains on you all the time. You don't even notice it.
Young had previously been under investigation by the FBI for similar charges, but the agency concluded that there was not enough evidence to convict him beyond a reasonable doubt. In a 2010 memo, the FBI said they had instead forwarded a letter outlining certain actions taken by Congressman Young and will leave punishment to the discretion of the Ethics Committee. In military news this morning, the Air Force has canceled Alaska's biggest annual military training exercise. Officials say the federal budget sequester has left them with no choice but to call off the first red flag exercise of the year. KUAC's Tim Ellis has more on the story.
Pacific Air Force's officials say it was, quote, budgetary considerations that forced cancellation of the springtime running of red flag exercises, which were scheduled to begin in a couple of weeks. It's the first time that the twice-annual two-week training exercises operated mainly out of Eielson Air Force Base have been canceled since the service began running the exercises in Alaska in 1992. It's a big event on the Alaskan Military Installation's annual training calendars. Red Flag on average involves more than 1,000 people per rotation and the deployment of up to 60 aircraft to Eielson and an additional 500 people and 40 aircraft to Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. The militaries of allied nations typically send personnel and aircraft to the exercises, which are held throughout the 67,000-square-mile Joint Pacific-Alaska Range Complex. Pacific Air Force's officials say units from Canada and the United Kingdom were scheduled to participate in this spring's red flag. They say they've offered the Allied pilots the use of the airspace and the ranges if they're still interested. Officials with the command were not available Wednesday afternoon to talk to KUAC about the issue. An Air Force spokeswoman told the Associated Press earlier in the day that planning continues so far on the second round of red flag exercises scheduled for August. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
An official welcome home celebration for about 100 Anchorage-based soldiers will be held this afternoon. The ceremony marks the return of the 23rd Engineer Company to Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson from Afghanistan. The soldiers returned to base March 14th after clearing roadside bombs from busy roads during a nine-month deployment. The unit was featured in the Heroes of Hell's Highway documentary, which aired on the Discovery Channel. Alaskans have until Sunday to apply for this year's permanent fund dividend. Eligible residents can sign up online or pick up forms at designated distribution centers. Alaskans received checks of $878 in October when the 2012 dividend was paid. The money comes from investment profits from Alaska's oil wealth savings account. To qualify for that dividend, residents must live in the state for a full calendar year. Nenana Ice Classic officials say the Tanana River ice at Nenana is the thinnest it's been in more than a month. The ice was slightly more than 47 inches thick when it was measured yesterday. That's the thinnest measurement since February 6, when the ice was measured at 42 inches. The ice is almost 4 inches thinner than it was on Monday. Ice Classic manager Sherry Fornes says that does not necessarily mean the ice is shrinking. She says measurements are taken in different spots each time. People can buy tickets through April 5th to guess the day and time that the ice will go out at Nenana. And here in the capital city, spring appears to be here to stay. Winter already becoming a memory. The time for ski and snowboarding is coming to a close. But first, one last shot for some young two plankers to wrap up the season with a bang. Barbara Lind of Eagle Crest Ski Area says about 40 skiers from Fairbanks and Anchorage will be in town competing this weekend.
We have the under 14 and under 12 state championships. So these are the best kids around the state who will be competing in a two-day event of giant slalom and slalom races. And we have some hot racers from Juneau that are going to challenge some of those from Anchorage and Fairbanks, so it should be pretty exciting. The races start at 10:30 on both Saturday and Sunday.
And other events at the ski area this weekend, it's University of Alaska Southeast Day tomorrow, and then on Sunday, a bunch of Easter activities all day include egg hunts, Easter bonnet contests, and chasing the purple Easter bunny up and down the slopes. Lynn says they'll be closed Monday through Thursday next week. They're only open next Friday through Sunday, and then only on the 13th and 14th. The last day of operation for the Eagle Crest Ski Area is April 14th. Weather forecast for the Capital City calls for cloudy skies and a chance of rain and snow for today. A possibility of up to 3 inches of snow for tonight. Temperatures between 34 and 42 degrees and largely rain for most of this weekend with temperatures in the mid-30s to mid-40s. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour.